Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. A special week this week. We're back to the Issue Is debates. Two of our favorites are back. Brian Tyler Cohen on the left, Michael Knowles on the right. Last time we did a debate with them, it was one of our most viewed shows, our most listened to podcasts. And I think this one is even better. There's more heat. And it's quite a week to have this sort of debate. We talk about President Trump. What was up with his home and the search with the FBI? What's up with him pleading the fifth? What's up with President Biden, who's gotten a lot of wins lately legislatively, but it hasn't really translated into poll numbers? What more can he do on that front? And it probably gets the most heated when we talk about abortion rights, something that both of them are very passionate about, and even the possibility that gay marriage could be overturned. So here again is our debate with Brian and Michael. Brian, one of the most followed voices on the left. His YouTube page has millions of viewers. He's got a podcast called No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen, which I'm the most frequent guest on. But mostly it's a lot of Democratic leaders on there, including this week the White House Chief of Staff. He recently interviewed the president and the vice president. And Michael hosts the Verdict with Ted Cruz podcast, which is one of the most popular podcasts on all of Apple. He's also host of the Michael Knowles Show on the Daily Wire, author of the book Speechless, and a new father. So here it is, our full uncut debate, which includes content that had to be edited out for TV because of timing purposes, because we went so long with them and it was so engaging, I just kept going, knowing that we could give the podcast extra time. Here's Brian and Michael on The Issue Is. Brian, Michael, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be with you.
A big story this week, the various investigations of Donald Trump. In New York, he sat for hours of questions in a civil case, which is focused on the Trump Organization's finances. Apparently didn't say much during that deposition. He repeatedly pled the fifth, which, of course, is a constitutional right that allows you to avoid giving testimony that would potentially incriminate yourself. In the past, Trump would often mock those who pled the fifth. Here's a collection of those moments compiled by MSNBC.
The Fifth Amendment.
Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment.
Horrible.
You see, the mob takes the fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
Michael, what do you make of his decision to plead the fifth after mocking it for so many years?
Well, President Trump mocked that before he realized that the Justice Department and the FBI had illegally spied on his campaign, then tried to undermine his administration, and now are continuing, I think, in an absolutely unprecedented, egregious sort of way to prevent him from running again in 2024 because he's the chief rival to Joe Biden. So I understand why he might mock his political rivals for taking the fifth in 2016. But once you find out that the FBI lied, fabricated evidence on a FISA warrant, FISA application, such that the FBI illegally spied on his campaign and then continued to go after him for years and years and years. I actually forgot to mention the $32 million years-long Mueller probe, also based on absolutely nothing, turned up nothing. At that point, I think you have to realize, if you've got even two brain cells to rub together, gosh, these guys seem to be after me. The Attorney General in New York, Letitia James, ran her campaign on destroying Trump, and it seems they're going to try to destroy him any way they can, spaghetti at the wall. Go after the Trump Organization, go after his documents, use the Presidential Records Act or whatever. And so I think Trump was wise not to play ball with these people who are politically motivated and simply out to stop him from winning another term.
Brian, is this much to do about nothing?
You know, legal stuff aside, from the right, we're hearing every obfuscation in the book about how the DOJ and the FBI are politicized, how Biden personally signed off on all of this, how this is political retribution, a way to get Trump not to run. All of it is to distract from the fact that Trump is alleged to have broken the law. You know, he withheld boxes of classified nuclear documents. He, you know, all of everything that he was accused of in the New York AG's probe. That's it. Republicans won't mention that part because they wouldn't be able to wallow in perpetual victimhood. So instead, they'll deflect and cry foul and promote criminal, you know, conspiracy theories, anything but acknowledge the reasons for the search warrant, for example, in this most recent case at Mar-a-Lago. And that's because the guy is a criminal who can't stop breaking the law.
Brian, have any other presidents violated the Presidential Records Act before?
I can't speak to what other presidents have done with the I know that this is a big talking point on the right that President Obama has stolen.
What we don't know at this point is if that was all that this was about, because we don't know all the details
Correct.
Of what led to the probable
but Alex,
cause.
It's worth pointing out because Brian brought up this point of Donald Trump violating the Presidential Records Act. Donald Trump is accused of having some documents at Mar-a-Lago. Barack Obama took millions and millions of documents to Chicago, and he told the National Archives he was only doing that to digitize the documents, then he would send it right back. It's been 5 years, they haven't digitized a single document. It's not just Obama, LBJ did it, Nixon did it, took decades to get those documents back.
Let's get into this for a moment. This week, the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, spoke about the FBI search of Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago. Here's some of what he said.
Upholding the rule of law means applying the law evenly, without fear or favor.
So we've already talked about it a little bit. The Wall Street Journal this week says that the FBI agent seized 11 boxes, including documents marked top secret. Critics say the former president did not follow the process to declassify those. The Washington Post says those documents include nuclear secrets for the U.S. Brian, you know, Michael is saying all this was overkill, was unnecessary, was politicized. What do you say?
Well, first of all, let me just go back to what Michael had mentioned before about President Obama doing the same thing. That's a lie. The National Archives released a statement today that Obama has zero control over the maintenance of how those documents are stored and that they're unclassified. So all you have to do is look to what the National Archives just said to debunk exactly what he said.
Barack Obama has no control over what the Barack Obama Presidential Library does with millions of documents? That seems a little strange to me.
Those documents are stored by the National Archives, not by Barack Obama. He has no say over how those are maintained. They've already released this information. Alex, if you want later while you're editing this to put that on the screen.
The documents are not
the
National Archives.
Yeah.
They're maintained by the National Archives,
not by Barack Obama.
Michael, are you concerned though to that point though that this concept of potentially having nuclear secrets just sort of floating around in your office, if that's what it really is, and again, we don't know yet if that's what this really is.
Right. The same agencies that said that there was a tape of Donald Trump urinating on prostitutes in Moscow based on a dossier that we know was fabricated and paid for by Hillary Clinton, that's the same group that is now using anonymous sources, insinuating through the Washington Post, which is the Pravda for the deep state swamp propagandists, that these were nuclear secrets. But the point to classification, Brian brings up a great point here. The question is, were these documents classified? The president, Donald Trump, says they were not classified because Donald Trump, when he was president, had discretion to declassify whatever he wanted. And by the way, when we talk about the process for declassification, it's a very murky subject because the president does not answer to anybody on what can be classified and declassified. He doesn't answer to some middling bureaucrat in the DOJ. He is the president of the United States. So even if these documents were nuclear secrets or something, which I seriously doubt that they are, we actually know from the warrant, which has already leaked, that a lot of them were binders of photographs and random sort of papers. That still would not matter. President Trump could declassify as president whatever he wanted and post it on Twitter if the oligarchs in Silicon Valley had not kicked him off. It would seem to me quite clear that that President Trump had every right to have certain of these documents with him. The DOJ was aware of that. And just to prove to you that this was not an urgent matter of national security, Joe Biden's been president for more than 18 months. If this was the urgent nuclear secrets that could destroy the world, why did they wait 18 months? Furthermore, the FBI got the warrant to raid Mar-a-Lago on August 5th. Why did they wait 3 days? They said this is an urgent matter of national security.
You're throwing I feel like I'm living in a Fox News comment section right here. First of all, they made that request to him. When somebody steals documents, normally they would just go get it. They gave him the benefit of the doubt. They made that request. Then they issued a subpoena, which is not something you would normally do for stolen documents.
Let me just get this out.
They made that request. Then they issued a subpoena. Then they eventually had to get a federal magistrate to sign off on a search warrant when it met the evidentiary burden of probable cause. This idea that they waited too many days, they issued that on a Friday. The search happened on a Monday. Also, this idea that Donald Trump has sole authority to declassify any documents, and so everything that he had in his possession was declassified anyway. That doesn't matter because based on the crimes that he's alleged to have committed, which are espionage, a violation of the Espionage Act, obstruction of justice, and criminal mishandling of government records, it doesn't matter. The classification doesn't matter.
The Espionage Act means
that Trump had information that could be used for the injury of the United States or to the advantage of a foreign nation. I couldn't even begin to imagine the meltdown that you would be having if Barack Obama took nuclear documents home with him or was being investigated for any of these things. I would charge you to look into your camera, Michael, and tell me that if you swapped out Donald Trump for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton in the exact same scenario, that you would be making all of these excuses.
Well, it would be very difficult to swap out Hillary because mercifully she was never the president. But she did commit the exact same crime that Trump is being accused of. It was actually much more egregious when Hillary committed it because Donald Trump is accused of having had some documents which he had every right to declassify in a physical form that the DOJ knew about. They even told him to put a padlock on the room. Hillary Clinton had classified material on a server that was not secure that could have been and in fact was hacked by foreign governments. And furthermore, Donald Trump had documents that were years old, that were outdated documents. Hillary had the documents from her time as Secretary of State. So these crimes were committed by the Democrats. The difference is this: Hillary had much less of a right to do it, and there was no raid on the Clinton compound.
All right, before we get into a deep discussion, Alex, let me just say really quick, and then we're going to move on.
Republicans are losing their minds over Hillary Clinton's private email server, and it's been the better part of a decade now. That's how committed to the bit these guys are over mishandled documents and national security secrets. And yet, this guy's got alleged nuclear secrets in his little golf course / cemetery, and suddenly the pearl clutching over sensitive documents mysteriously vanishes. You know, if you think that Hillary Clinton being careless with emails, and that's what that's the extent of what the federal government found, is equivalent to Donald Trump taking nuclear documents to his golf course where he regularly consults with his very highly qualified buffet patrons, and didn't return those documents even after a request and a subpoena, then you are living on another planet.
Let's move on and talk about the current president, Joe Biden. Of course, he's dealing with the challenges of inflation, but he's also had a lot of legislative successes lately. Biggest climate change bill in U.S. history, biggest infrastructure bill, first major gun bill in 30 years, bipartisan investment in semiconductors, healthcare for burn pit survivors, unemployment low. He ordered the killing of the top leader of Al-Qaeda. Still, his approval rating is only 40%, according to Real Clear Politics, which is an average of a bunch of polls recently. About 56% disapprove. Brian, do you think he deserves more credit, which I assume you do? And why do you think he's not getting it?
Of course I think he deserves more credit. He's accomplished the most of any president in any of our lifetimes. Why he's not getting that credit is obvious. There's a right-wing media machine that's hell-bent on the destruction of his presidency, and let's not pretend that's the case here. You know, Biden could cure cancer, and you'd have Jim Jordan and the rest of the GOP complain that cancer has rights too. But I believe that the American people aren't stupid. They're recognizing not only what this administration is getting done, but what's at stake if Republicans do take control, and that is attacks on reproductive rights, restrictions on interstate travel and contraception, overturning same-sex marriage, ignoring climate change, ignoring gun violence, and on and on.
Michael, you think the president deserves some more credit?
I do not, but I do agree with one thing that Brian just said, which is that the American people are not stupid. They do know exactly what this administration is doing. That's why they overwhelmingly disapprove of it. A lot of those legislative achievements that you pointed out there, Alex, they fall under a bill that the Democrats have called the Inflation Reduction Act that even the majority of Democrats don't think will reduce inflation. A study out of Penn Wharton's budget model showed that it actually will exacerbate inflation. Even Bernie Sanders, who is one of the most left-wing senators out there, Bernie Sanders refers to it as the so-called Inflation Reduction Act because it will not reduce inflation and it will actually increase it. So you cite low unemployment, certainly after the economy is shut down by the government for 2 years. When you allow people to go back to work, that can have a nice looking effect on unemployment, but when you're talking about why people might disapprove of this administration, I think it probably has less to do with whatever those scary right-wing talking points are and more to do with the 40-year record-high inflation. And the president has got no plan to deal with inflation, so what does he do? He just redefines inflation. He redefines a recession. We are now officially in a recession. He just tries to change the dictionary definition of that. Well, they can manipulate language all they want. The left loves to do that. They can't change the underlying reality of which the American people are well aware.
Michael, and inflation is a real problem, isn't it, Brian?
Of course inflation is a problem. It's a problem everywhere. There's 8% inflation in Canada. There's 8% inflation in Mexico, 8% inflation in the U.S., 9% inflation in Europe, and the 9% inflation in the United Kingdom, 10% in Brazil, 10% in Netherlands, 10% in Spain. Argentina has 71%. Turkey has 80%. Did Biden cause all of that? Because, you know, we're hearing all of these mixed messages from the right. On one hand, Biden is this senile puppet who's not in control of anything, or he's this, you know, unilaterally responsible for every country on the earth, their inflation. So it's getting kind of difficult to keep up with these.
I don't think we've ever claimed. I don't claim that he's responsible for Argentina's inflation. But Brian, if your argument going into the midterms is that Joe Biden has done a better job handling the economy than the tin pot dictatorships of Latin America, that seems like a pretty low bar. I don't think the people are going to reward Democrats for that.
Well, let's talk a little bit.
Let me say one more thing. There hasn't been a single Republican administration in any of our lifetimes that's actually added more jobs or performed better than a Democratic administration. In fact, most of the Republican administrations are plunging us deep into recessions, and then the Democratic presidents have to get us out of those recessions. And if you can point to a single example in the last three decades of that not being the case, I'd love to hear it.
Well, let's
Brian, Biden sent us into a recession right now. We officially entered into a recession last week. And when you keep citing the unemployment numbers, the government forced the economy to shut down for 2 years. So, yes, of course, when you tell people they're allowed to go back to work, they will go back to work. That's not the sign of economic health. You see this reflected in the consumer price index and the producer price index. You see this reflected all over the economy.
All right. Let's talk for a moment about the midterms, right? Because we're about to have this big choice as a country. And if Republicans win back the House, it'll likely be another Californian, Kevin McCarthy of Bakersfield, running the show. What would that mean for the average person watching right now? Michael, the real world difference of Speaker Pelosi versus Speaker McCarthy.
Well, what you would get if the Republicans only win the House is you would be able to stop these ridiculous spending bills that will mortgage away more of our future and actually exacerbate inflation. So I suppose that would be a good thing. But that's really all it would do. If the Republicans also manage to take the Senate, which may or may not happen, it's a tough electoral map this year for the Republicans, that would go a little bit further. It would be able to stop some of Joe Biden's horrible appointments, the kind of people who are turning federal law enforcement agencies into tools for partisanship. We were discussing a little bit earlier the tin pot dictatorships of Latin America. This is, of course, the first time that you've ever seen federal law enforcement raid the home of a former president and presumptive GOP nominee, the political rival of the incumbent. So that would be something that Republican senators could stop. But beyond that, we've just got to get
Michael,
rid of
to
Joe
that point,
Biden.
Though, the head
change.
Of the FBI,
also the first time
the head
that
of the FBI
won.
Was appointed by Donald Trump, who's a Republican who worked in Republican administrations and was widely supported by Republicans.
The Joe Biden's attorney general, Merrick Garland, who was almost a Democrat nominee for the Supreme Court, or almost a Democrat justice, rather, he was the one who made the call. There was some confusion initially. Who made the call to raid Mar-a-Lago? Was it the FBI? Was it the White House? Was it the DOJ? But it was Joe Biden's AG who did it. So I know Democrats keep bringing up this point that Trump appointed Christopher Wray. And first of all, Donald Trump made some suspect appointments throughout his presidency. I'm not going to defend all of his appointments.
I thought he only appoints the best people.
Unfortunately, there were a few errors on personnel there, but you can't blame the raid even on Christopher Wray. That goes up to Merrick Garland.
Brian, your thoughts on what a Speaker Kevin McCarthy means for the country?
Well, we don't really have to guess what a Speaker Kevin McCarthy means for the country, because he's already promised that if the Republican Party takes over, they'll use their majorities to obstruct investigations into crimes by Republican politicians. You know, it'll be 2 years of Jim Jordan speaking 400 words a minute about Hunter Biden. Like, the entire federal government apparatus will basically devolve into a comment section of a Dan Bongino Facebook video. So I would just say directly to people watching, you have a choice. either your tax dollars go toward allowing the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the party to set the investigative calendar, and our government is going to be guided by Q drops and probes into bamboo fibers in ballots, or your tax dollars can go to a party that is protecting reproductive rights, which the majority of Americans support, protecting same-sex marriage, which the majority of Americans support, combating climate change and making the U.S. a leader in clean energy, which the majority of Americans support, and creating a just tax system where the rich actually pay their fair share, again, which the majority of Americans support. So that choice is yours.
All right. Brian, I just have one question on that. Just one question, which is, you mentioned that if the Republicans take the Congress, that they'll investigate Hunter Biden. Why would they investigate Hunter Biden?
Because, like I said, all they do is spout off about the same thing to find people to vilify. If it's not Hillary Clinton, if it's not George Soros, if it's not Hunter Biden, it's always somebody to vilify, to distract from
their
own crimes.
I thought it was the videos of all of the crimes that he committed that are not being investigated right now, because we have a two-tier
justice system. I don't seem to remember Hunter Biden being elected to any position. I'm focused on on what our government can actually do to help people.
No, he just traded his father's influence when he was vice president.
All right, before we devolve into a Hunter Biden discussion, let's talk about an issue that I think probably more people in the country are more focused on, which is abortion rights. The VP weighing in this week.
The government should not be in the position, nor should it have a right, to make the most intimate and personal decisions that anyone can make about heart and home.
Vice President Kamala Harris gathering various California leaders in San Francisco this week to discuss the state's response to abortion rights. We're talking with Brian Tyler Cohen on the left, Michael Knowles on the right. Michael, when the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas wrote about the court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and return the abortion decision to the states, he suggested they should do the same thing for gay marriage. No other justice joined him in that decision. Michael, I know your podcasting partner, Ted Cruz, thinks that Justice Thomas has it right on the gay marriage issue. Do you agree with him?
He certainly does, although we should clarify here, Thomas's point was on a matter of constitutional interpretation. So he was not expressing his views of marriage, or for that matter, contraception within marriage in the Griswold decision, or contraception outside of marriage in the Eisenstadt decision. He was expressing his view of a concept called substantive due process, which really took off because of liberal legal activists in the latter part of the 20th century. Substantive due process, which is a contradiction in terms. A process, of course, is a procedure. Substantive due process suggesting that you have certain rights that are procedural rights outside of a procedure. It was just a way for the court to cram in a whole bunch of things into the Constitution that aren't really there. I beg you to find me the right to a condom, or the necessity of redefining marriage away from what everyone for all of history had ever thought it was in the Constitution. It simply is not there. So Thomas is absolutely right that substantive due process is a bunch of nonsense, and we should get rid of it as a matter of the rule of law. But it's worth pointing out, just as a political matter, Justice Thomas was the only justice on the court to sign on to that concurrent opinion. The rest of the conservatives would not even sign on to that. Sam Alito, the much maligned Sam Alito, the far right justice, he would not sign on to that either. So as a practical matter, Obergefell, Griswold, Eisenstadt, Lawrence v. Texas, they're not at risk right now, even from the most conservative members, other than, say, Clarence Thomas.
Before we get too much into the weeds of a law school seminar, which is what we just
if I could just say one thing to that, and not on the legalese of it, but you know, it is always funny how the same people who warned that Roe was not in danger are now warning that same-sex marriage is not in danger, contraception is not in danger, interstate travel are not in danger. If we listen to these people when they had promised us that Roe wasn't in danger, we wouldn't be in a country right now that's just had 50 years of precedent and a woman's right to her own bodily autonomy stripped away.
Well, I'll say, just for my own part, I have never suggested Roe is not in danger. I have always been very hopeful that Roe would be overruled, because you're discussing bodily autonomy. I'm all for the bodily rights of babies in the womb. And after the Dobbs decision, of course, that didn't even protect the rights of babies in the womb. It simply returned the issue to the states, where it had always been until this ridiculous decision in 1973, which is no more.
All right.
I mean, we're looking at More than 50 years of precedent. And you mentioned some of these cases, Griswold in 65, Eisenstadt in 72, Roe in 73, and Casey in 1992. All of that is precedent upon precedent. And, you know, claiming that the court is only correct now, that it's following your specific political and or religious views, shows that you're just interested in cherry-picking decisions that comport with those views.
You had Brian, also are you familiar with the Dred Scott decision?
Yes.
The Dred Scott decision, which said that black people can never be American citizens, that was also Supreme Court precedent, right? Would you say that the court was right
Here's the difference. This is the first time that the court has reversed a decision to take away rights, and it has stripped that right from half of the population. And the practical impact of that is that, you know, in real life now, we're looking at a 10-year-old in Ohio who would have been forced to give birth to her rapist baby. We're looking at incest victims potentially giving birth to their own brothers or sisters. We're looking at doctors being jailed. We're looking at police questioning people about miscarriages. I mean, that is a police state. Michael, is that government? Is that limited government? Because to me, it looks like...
That is limited, yeah.
It looks like Christo-fascist religious extremism.
The case you're referring to in Ohio, Brian, by the way, the 10-year-old who was reportedly raped, she actually, by the Ohio law, would not have been prevented from getting an abortion in Ohio, regardless of what you think about pro-life or pro-abortion. That she may have gone to Indiana, but she wouldn't have needed to. But furthermore, when you talk about rape and incest and all of that, that accounts for far less than 1% of all abortions. Statistically, 100% of abortions are elective abortions. I think those should be gotten rid of. And I think the Dred Scott analogy is important here, because the Dred Scott decision from the court said that black people are not really people and they can't be American citizens. And the Roe v. Wade decision from the court said that babies are not really people and their existence and their value depends simply on whether they're desired or not by their parents. And both of them are horrific, and it's very good that both were overturned.
So if it's only just a small percentage rape and incest, that 1%, do you agree with an exemption for rape and incest then?
Well, it's also kind of curious that people make these two distinctions between rape and incest. I don't know of a whole lot of consensual incest, so we're really just talking about exceptions for the case of rape, and the liberals always try to argue from the absolute most hard cases. But the argument for pro-life is that a person is a person, no matter how small, and also an abortion does not fix anything. Abortion will not get rid of a rape. Abortion will not undo any sort of crime. Abortion does not even make any lifelong... take away any lifelong responsibilities or anything like that. There is such a thing as adoption. You can deal with very difficult, horrible circumstances in a way that will not increase trauma to people, as abortion does, and will not lead them to commit horrific actions and to end a human life.
We're running out of time. Brian, last word to you.
I would just say to that, I have two things to say to that. One, it doesn't matter what your opinion on this is, because this is not your body. It's not your choice. You're not the one who is able to make this decision for anybody else, regardless of how easy you, Michael Knowles, thinks it is for somebody to put their child up for adoption. The second thing I would say is,
there are 36 couples for every one newborn who's put up for adoption. 36 couples who want to adopt in America.
Here's the thing. Whether we're talking about abortion or gay marriage, you know, these are people's lives that you're messing with right now, all because you think that your religious beliefs are licensed to dictate how other people live. And what's craziest for me is how you guys shove this idea of limited government down everybody's throats, and yet the people constantly stripping others of their rights are Republicans. If you don't want an abortion, don't get an abortion. If you don't want a gay marriage, don't get gay married. If you don't want to read certain books from libraries, don't read those books from libraries. If you don't want to identify differently, then don't. But why should nobody get these things? You know, with all
of
these things,
if you don't want to commit a murder, don't commit a murder.
With all of these things, hold on, Michael, let me just finish my point. With all of these things, you lose nothing. All that happens is that other people enjoy equal rights, and yet conservatives' beliefs are apparently so goddamn fragile that the mere existence of people who are different from them is somehow a threat to you.
I don't think any of those platitudes mean much of anything. We just don't want babies to be killed in the womb. You brought up this
point, Brian. But
these
aren't babies. And if you wanted to use the 1% example,
they are
if you wanted to use the 99% and 1% example, 99% of these abortions happen in the first trimester, and also they're
still
not babies. They are embryos. They are non-viable embryos. And
do you,
not
do you know,
all of that,
Brian, do you know what the word fetus means?
What a woman does with her
course,
own body.
Of course, Brian, we're, do you know of what course, the, I don't know if we're going to...
There's one very important point to make, even beyond pointing out that the word fetus is just Latin for offspring. The important point to make in responding to what Brian said
Michael,
there,
depending
is
on the,
you said
depending
that because
on the gestational stage... These are not all fetuses. They are zygotes, then embryos, then fetuses.
All right. They're not all going to talk over each other and become babies. All right.
There's one important point that Brian made that I have to respond
to.
Brian, you said that because I'm a man, I do not have any right to have an opinion on abortion. It's not your body.
That's the point I was making.
I would notice, Brian, and I hate to assume your gender, that you are also a man and you are opining on abortion. And more importantly, the Supreme Court that decided Roe v. Wade, how many women were on that court that decided that issue?
Of course, there
were. It's not a matter of your gender. It's a matter of it not being my body. It's a matter of it not being your body. That's the point.
Okay, we're going to end it there because we got to end it somewhere. we've had a contentious debate between Michael Knowles on the right, Brian Tyler Cohen on the left. Let's have some fun with them in our last remaining moments and see if we can find anything for them to agree on. So we play a game called Personal Issues. We're putting 30 seconds up on the clock. This is first thing that comes to mind. Be quick with it. Okay. Michael, we'll start with you. What's your favorite band or musician?
Elvis Presley.
Brian.
Pretty Lights.
Brian, what's your favorite book of all time?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go for a recent one, Jamie Raskin's most recent book.
Michael?
Dante's Divine Comedy. Outside of the Bible, Dante.
Or Speechless by Michael Knowles. Michael, favorite movie?
The Godfather, followed by Me, Myself, and Irene.
Brian?
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Okay, and lastly, to each of you, Michael, dogs or cats?
I'm a people person.
Brian?
Oh, I'm a dog person for sure.
Yeah, and Brian, the last time you were on, you talked about your love for your dog, Aston, who may get more attention than any dog on the planet. But since you were on, you kind of cheated on Aston a bit. Here is video of you and President Biden's dog when you interviewed the president at the White House. Maybe we can bring this up. What was that moment like meeting the presidential dog?
Yeah, look, dogs can do no wrong. It was right up there with meeting President Biden himself. I'm a big advocate for dogs. They can do no wrong in my book.
And Michael, don't spin this that a dog is as good as Joe Biden, which I'm sure you're working on. But since we last talked, last time we did this, you had just had a baby, and now you've had another baby, which I think we've got a photo of you and your beautiful wife there. What's it like? How's fatherhood times two? How's it going? You getting any sleep?
It's absolutely magnificent. I hope that when I watch the playback of this debate and discussion today, I'm speaking even somewhat coherent English because I have not slept in 2 weeks, but it's still wonderful. The little guy is extremely cute, and I already want to make another one. I think my wife might want a little break, but me, I'm ready to go for number three.
All right. Well, we encourage you to check out both of their podcasts. Check out our podcast for more debates like this. The Issue Is, just search for that wherever you're looking for a podcast. Brian, Michael, this was really fun. Thank you both for bringing it in a big way this week.
Thank you.
Great to be with you both.
Our thanks to Brian and Michael, and our thanks to you for listening to this very fun edition. I really enjoyed that. I hope you will subscribe to us, The Issue Is Podcast. Let other people know about us, rate us, review us, all that good stuff, and look at some of our other past debates and other shows as well. And we'll be back next week with more of The Issue Is. See you then.